What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Team features Politics Rap. The Politics Rap team consists of IB students from Rickards High School. Student panelists examine today's local, state, and national political issues. So tap into the pulse with young folks from Rickards High School this hour on 411 Team. First, an update on the news.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen talks politics. We're tapping into the pulse of young folks. The Politics Rap team consists of teens with diverse political affiliations, all in the IB program at Rickards High School. The panel seeks to analyze and evaluate current national, state, and local politics while maintaining a substantive political dialogue. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here in the studio, I welcome five dynamic teens.
Hey, my name is Apoorva. I'll be a 12th grader next year at Rickards, and I really like mangoes.
Okay. Hello, my name is Raymond Johnson. I'll be a senior next year, and I really love history.
Hi, my name is Quinn Holdenschrock. I'll be a senior next year at Rickards High School, and I really like soccer.
Hi, my name is Hayden Kelly. I'll be a junior next year at Rickards High School, and one of my biggest academic interests has to be history, specifically U.S. history.
Hi, my name is Janine Heller. I'll be a junior at Rickards next year, and I really like animals.
And I just want to extend a sincere thanks for you all coming. Looking forward to this discussion. And although you're currently, you know, on summer holiday or break, school security continues to be a major concern. We hear about it on the news, local, state, national. How do you feel about the security of your school? Do you feel safe? Why?
Well, right now, I can certainly say that seeing in the news, and especially going back to the Sandy Hook shooting, because this has been my first year back in public school this year, last year being a 10th grader. So, and when I went to school first through third grade, and in third grade, we actually pulled out of school because of the Sandy Hook shooting, and that was a very scary time. We came home, and on the news, I remember seeing just overhead video of the school. Very scary, and it is a scary thought sitting in your classroom and wondering, is somebody going, could I die today? It's very scary. Mm-hmm. Do I feel safe right now? Not really, because, you know, you don't want to live your life with fear, and I, you know, try not to do that. But, you know, there is that persistent thought in your head, is someone going to shoot me today? And, you know, there are a lot of different things we can do to, you know, combat this. There's a ton of things, you know. I don't believe one of them is arming teachers. I know that has been an opinion. I don't believe that is an answer, you know, that they have so much on their
right.
minds,
yeah.
you know.
They didn't
do.
Sign up to be police.
No, not at all.
So I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear. But we'll get back to that because I think you've raised some issues. Yes, ma'am, go right ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, right now at Rickards, I feel safe enough. But I worry about children at other schools in Florida where they are choosing to arm teachers, because after this legislative session, that is now an option. And, you know, I worry for the lives of those kids. Not, you know, there's always that nag when you're sitting in class that it's going to be your own life. But honestly, at this point, I'm just worried about other students across Florida.
Me personally, I believe that I am relatively safe while I'm at Rickards. But just these past few weeks, I woke up to news that there was a fire at my church, and there was arson, someone who committed arson and burnt part of my church. And that's, you know, a place of safety, you know, relaxation.
Should be.
Calmness. And that just kind of put things into perspective, along with Parkland and how that was in our state and everything like that. But with Rickards, I feel relatively safe. Yeah,
good.
I mean, for me at least, there's always that threat no matter what you do, what legislation is passed, there's always going to be someone out there who's going to find a way to hurt others. But yeah, I mean, I feel quite safe right now at my school. With the emergence of new legislation, as Quinn was talking about, it does worry me for future generations. But also, at the same time, we're taking strides towards developing other programs, such as guardian angel programs, which are a much better alternative to arming teachers. So I think what we're doing is right now we're really feeling out what things will really help us in the future, what things won't help us. And so there's a lot of confusion, but there's also a lot of good things that are happening.
Yes, ma'am.
At my school, I do feel pretty safe, but there are some concerns that come to me, like how easily it is to walk on campus at my school. Like, example, for ninth grade year, two homeless people just walked onto campus during lunch, just like right there. And that kind of bothers me, just to see how easy it is for someone to just go on campus just like that. And it's really easy to get into these buildings. But otherwise, I feel kind of safe.
Okay. You mentioned, Hayden, that you did not really feel safe. I mean, you're dealing with it, but you don't really.
I think that.
I was just going to say, what do you think it would take to make you feel safer?
I also think one of the things is that I've been homeschooled for a great majority of my life. Okay. So that kind of adds a little bit to it. I don't mean to say it's not Rickards in general. If I was at any public school, so I would feel kind of, you know, I haven't been in that, you know, the kind of public school setting for quite a while, since like third, fourth grade. So, you know, if I was in any school, it'd be the same. You know, things that can make me feel safer. You know, I think one thing is that we need to care about our students. Every school, every public school needs to really consider, you know, mental health, because I think that's a very, very important thing with students today. Just, I know how stressed I was last year. You know, my mental health is fine, but what about the students that are really stressed? And on top of that, they're getting bullied, and on top of a thousand different things, you know, and there's, you know, it's not just in school, it's on social media, and that's just the way today is. A lot of things happen on social media that should not be said and should not be happening.
Well, that's another topic. We'll have to talk about social media. I'll put that on my back burner, because just the influence that it has. And I mean, and it's ongoing. Yeah. But we're going to move on, because, you know, there's plenty to talk about. E-cigarettes.
Oh, God.
Well, I got a reaction from everybody when I said, and vaping. The whole e-cigarettes and vaping, you know, they're in the forefront. I mean, we're talking about, what is it, a rechargeable element that heats up and vapes the liquid or the substance. The problem is, it's becoming more and more popular with middle school and high school students. That is where the problem is. Yeah. And what is it? I'm so out of it. Juul.
Juul.
Okay, I got it. It is a very, very popular brand. And we're talking about nicotine.
Yeah.
Nicotine is addictive. Now, legally, you're not supposed to be able to access it if you are under 18. But you and I know that is not an issue. Suggestions on how we address this whole vaping, Juul, e-cigarettes. What should we do? What do we do about it? I mean, because I don't think young folks, and maybe you all, having a real appreciation for nicotine and what it does to you and the addiction, or do you? I mean, so anyhow, maybe you do. Let's talk about it. Comments.
I mean, what I think, my basically the biggest reason that it's so appealing to younger generations is, again, social media. Also, it's so easy for big corporations to be able to come into neighborhoods, schools, any place where there is a huge amount of student populations, and just say, hey, this is a cool thing, try it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not really laws regulating. I mean, you can't obviously advertise in a school, but you can advertise in places that students go a lot. Like, I've seen posters in libraries. I've seen posters at gas stations. So it's kind of crazy where these companies can reach, and their reach is insane. I mean, if a student every day is walking around seeing these posters, and then they see a friend using those products on social media, they're like, you know what, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe I'll try it. And then later on, they get addicted, and then it's hard for them to get off of it, and then they start influencing people their age as well. So I think the biggest problems right now would be how easy it is for corporations that run these, like, and social media, how easy it is to reach those younger generations.
I think another problem is, like, flavorings. Like, they create these flavors that are so enticing to young kids, or to high schoolers, to college age students, and I think that's really pulled in kids and children where they shouldn't be. And I do understand that there's sort of a need for them. Like, I understand people who have been smoking their whole lives, who are trying to get off of, like, smoking cigarettes. I understand that. But it's just such a problem, and I feel like it's ingrained in sort of teenage culture right now. But it's definitely going to be something hard to get kids off of.
I believe Perva and Quinn did really raise some good points. I've looked at, like, advertisements. Mm-hmm. Advertisements are designed, like, specifically designed to get
people.
They're
targeted.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're appealing, and they're, like, you know, they associate them with, like, status symbols, and, in prior generations, mm-hmm. it was a symbol of, like, you know, like, you're cool and you're just
hip.
You're hip. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's continuing to be epidemic. I think in San Francisco they were taking a vote to ban it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know if that's going to be the answer. It'll be interesting to see how that evolves and what impact that really has on the use of e-cigarettes and vaping. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll get right back at you and continue to evaluate and analyze the political happenings of today. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are talking about the political happenings of today. We were talking about e-cigarettes and vaping. I had to take a break, but we're ready to get started again. You're in the hot seat.
Well, I 100% agree with what, you know, all my colleagues have said. The companies, the advertisements, everything is designed, you know, to convince people that, hey, you should come buy this product. And the flavoring, And, you know, it has become ingrained in our culture, the youth culture, that it's like, okay to do this, it's popular to do this, it's cool, it's hip, you should want to do this. And the amount of people and youth I've seen using it is ludicrous. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and, you know, I think we need to make it harder for people to buy it because, you know, it's so easy to buy it in schools. Like, people will sell it, you know, just in the schools and stuff. You know, not even buy it from gas stations. So I think we need to make it a little bit harder to buy it. And I also think we need to continue to educate the youth that it's not safe. It's really dangerous, and, you know, nicotine could lead to even worse addictions that, you know, you don't really want to get into.
And I really don't think people realize, like, how much nicotine is in it. Like, in one pod, it equals a pack of cigarettes, like, the nicotine. And, like, there's kids that smoke Juul, two pods, and it's like,
oh, yes,
two pods in one day or something like that, and they just don't realize how much they're intaking.
Good point. As we move on, what about the crime rate? Crime has dropped overall for the state. We seem to be looking pretty good. It's even dropped 7% in Tallahassee. However, we remain the city with the highest crime rate. Not over Jacksonville, over Miami, Tallahassee. What's happening?
Well, I guess it's kind of hard to explain from a student perspective because I'm not a police officer, so
well,
I don't know what's happening.
I just want to hear, you know, as you hear about it and you look about it and you think mm-hmm. about it, just, you know, what, from your perspective, what do you see? What do you think? Maybe we might be missing something because your perspective might give us a clue, really, as to how to approach it. That's what I think.
Okay, so one thing that I guess definitely stands out to me is that Tallahassee does have a large minority and financially unstable population. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those families are the families that tend to have more kids, mm-hmm. that tend to have more people from a younger background. Whereas you see families that are on the richer side have two kids, you'll see families that aren't that financially stable have four or five kids to be able to help out around the house mm-hmm. or to make extra money for them. And so when that happens, the attention of the parents first gets divided. And then when that happens, it's just a spiral into, I guess, the culture of those people also as well. Mm-hmm. And so crime becomes something that's really appealing to those kids. And a habit that you learn as a kid is one of the hardest habits to break. I mean, if you start biting your nails at the age of 4, you're probably going to keep doing that until you're a senior in high school. So I think it does have a lot to do with how big of a minority and financially unstable population that we have in Tallahassee, and how a lot of the times in schools that really isn't addressed as mm-hmm. much. Where they'll say, hey, you know, you're struggling, your family is struggling, what can we do to help you out? What can we do to make you engaged in school so that you go home and you're engaged in learning and doing homework instead of going home and committing crimes?
Yeah, and just to throw in there, not just the schools, the whole community. Mm-hmm, I mean, yeah. If we set up economical situations where people can work, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's something, you know, I want your opinion, but that's a little variable that I got to throw out there because I think that plays into it. If we have a large population that is underserved,
yeah.
then what can we expect? You're next, Hayden, and then we'll go around. Cause
piggybacking off what Apurva said, you know, I think that we should do a lot for the youth, keep them engaged in school and stuff. And I think one excellent way to do that, I'm a baseball player myself. I think youth sports is a great way to, you know, serve mm-hmm. the people that a crime might be appealing to because, you know, it has kept me, you know, very engaged in school. You know, it can be hard doing your homework and stuff with sports and things like that. But I think if we were to, you know, give, you know, people, you know, something they care about, and that is a big thing that people care about is, you know, playing a sport. You know, it can help a lot of people, you know, relieve stress and take them
away.
You
got to be in school to do it.
Yeah, that is a thing.
I just think we got to throw that in there. And the other thing I want to throw in, because I don't want us to go down this road of thinking that all this crime is kids. Because it certainly isn't. You know, I mean, it's not kids.
College.
Okay?
College?
You know, and the points that you're making are indeed valid, but I just don't want us to take that curve and think, well, mm-hmm. it's coming from kids. No. Okay, yes, ma'am.
So, I sort of disagree with what you guys are saying. I think that, you know, there are so many communities in Florida that have, like, financially unstable mm-hmm. groups of people. And there are so many communities in Florida that have large minority populations. And I don't think that is the cause of crime in Tallahassee. Okay. I do think that as a fact, Tallahassee has one of the biggest wealth gaps. So yep. we have, like, mm-hmm. huge, you know, like, the gap between the rich and the poor in Tallahassee is way too large. And I don't know exactly how to solve this issue. I'm not an expert, but I think that, you know, job opportunities. I think you know, gentrification on the south side is a big problem, and I think that is also causing crime, and that is leading to, you know, unrest and unhappiness. And I don't really think it's all from these families. I think it's the situations that they've been put into by, you know, higher forces, the government, companies, other things like that. So.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I don't know. I would like to look more at the statistics behind it and all the numbers behind it, because it just seems like Tallahassee, of all places in Florida, like you said Miami, Jacksonville, it doesn't seem like Tallahassee would be that type of place. I believe Quinn and Hayden did bring up some good points. One of the things my dad says all the time is that people who don't have anything to do, who are not, there is an idle mind. Mm-hmm. And with this idle mind, they can just get up to all types of trouble. And it's just, like she said, the weight, not the wage gap.
The wealth gap.
Yeah. That is a very prevalent
thing present in
Tallahassee. So, yeah.
I feel like it's also a college town, so there's a lot of college students, you know, and, well, they do, like, what college students do, and they're kind of, they don't think before they do stuff, you know, and now that they're not being watched over by their parents and everything, and they have all this lenient free time and all of that, I think that's also what the problem is.
Well, okay, you know. No, and if you have other comments, feel free to add them. I mean, and I think that all of you have identified some very valid issues and concerns, because it's not any one thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not those people. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's not where you live. It's not. Sure, you might see one zip code that has more crime, but that one zip code may be determined by what you were saying, that whole great big gap, mm-hmm. you know, that gap of where the housing and who lives here and who lives there. So, but I think that you have raised and identified some issues that can be addressed. I mean, I don't know that they will. You look like you had something else you wanted to
say. No,
okay.
There's, like, certain points in Tallahassee. It's like when you cross a certain point, it's like a complete change. You can see if the money is being there or not. Right. So that's...
Well, you know, it's point. Like still from... It feels ancient, because when you cross the railroad...
Yes, yeah.
It's like, why is that still a thing, you know? That's just ridiculous.
And then you see development projects of building a new bridge that connects the two parts of Cascades, when you know all that money could be easily going into developing the underdeveloped parts of Tallahassee.
Or, you know, adequate housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. It's true. Another thing that happened is Governor DeSantis signed legislation that made hazing now a felony. Okay?
Okay.
And it covers the caller from any kind of charges. So if you call in, they won't, you know, go after you. My question is, as we look at hazing, does the victim have any responsibility in it? You know,
So hazing as in, like, and do you mean?
So hazing like in sororities, fraternities, that kind of hazing. Yeah.
Well, I guess.
I mean, what role does the victim play?
Well, the victim, it's in.
Is the victim really a victim? I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there for you all to think about it, okay? Because it seems like possibly you don't really have to do all the things you have to do. If somebody gives you a bottle of whiskey and tells you to drink it, you're not going to drink it. And I know you are. I can tell. I don't even know you. And I know you are going to do it. Just from interacting with you right now. You're going to be like, what? So, and, you know, I just wanted to explore that.
I think it, the victim, you know, if you put yourself in a bad situation, it's kind of your fault. In some cases, with, you know, hazing, if you put yourself in that situation and you buy into that peer pressure of, oh, I need to do this to, you know, be accepted, you know, I think that just comes with the whole mindset of the youth culture, harking back to what we were talking about, Jules and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just the culture of you want to feel accepted. And I feel like, you know, if we just stop wanting to try to be accepted by everybody and we're just okay with being ourselves and trying to set goals for ourselves and achieve those goals, I think we'd be better off. So I do believe that, you know, the victim does play some responsibility, but also if you're the person handing the bottle of whiskey over, you also have some responsibility yourself.
Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
I personally feel like that the victim isn't really the victim, because they already knew what they were doing when they were into the situation. Like, they already knew hazing was a thing, and, you know, you can stop at any point of time if you want to. So they're not really being forced to do this kind of stuff. They could stop whenever they want.
Okay.
Right. I think what we need to do when we're looking at this law is be able to separate someone who is truly a victim and someone who put themselves in that position. Because hazing can be everything from getting peer pressured into drinking an entire bottle of whiskey to being beat up by every single member of a sorority house. So when people call in, the first thing that should be on the operator's mind is, okay, we need to help the person who's calling in. You don't do that. You don't think about that if someone calls in asking help for a heart attack. So you shouldn't do that if someone's asking for help with hazing. But then after the situation's been kind of calmed down, you need to look at every detail where, okay, did this person put themselves into the situation? And was it because of pressure? And even sometimes you can't really blame the person for going into a situation by themselves, because a lot of the times, let's say you are in a college and your only friends want you to join the sorority, and then they put this constant pressure on you, like, okay, we're going to break off from you if you don't join it, and then you willingly go into these activities. Sometimes that pressure can be, like, devastating to a person. And so they just need some other help to try to get themselves out of that situation. So sometimes, even if they did put themselves in that situation, they're still a victim.
Yes, ma'am.
So I think that if you're calling in, like, to this operator about hazing, I feel like there's a pretty good chance you didn't know what you were getting into, or you've realized it's gone too far. So I think that, you know, in those cases, there is a victim. If you didn't know that you were going to join the sorority and be, like, terribly hazed, then I feel like that is something to speak up about. And, you know, in FSU, there was someone who died from hazing. So I really do think that, like, that idea of calling in, and I feel like that's good, because it can go too far. And a lot of times people don't know it's going to go so far, or they don't think about all the consequences. Like Janine was saying earlier, like, college students aren't thinking, you know? So I don't know. I think part of it is they are a victim, because bad things can happen that maybe they weren't expecting or they weren't prepared for. But in a certain sense, like, yeah, I mean, they knew they were going to join a sorority. They knew hazing was a part of it. So I don't know. It's kind of both, I guess.
Yes, sir. I can see the wheels because you were thinking.
It's just a very interesting topic. I believe if you know, like, what's coming, you're in college, right? You're getting used to this new environment. You're getting out of your parents' house. I feel like it should be case by case basis if someone is a victim or not. You just have to be rational. You have to be vigilant in what you're doing on these campuses, because it's just so much going on nowadays, and it's just, that's really all I have to say on the topic. That's all. Yeah.
Any other comments? Okay, all right. Well, as we move, you know, the photograph of the young father and his daughter that had drowned is everywhere. It's all around us. People are dying to get to the United States. Immigration has been a problem for a long time, and it continues to rear its ugly head, okay? What do we do? How do we address this immigration issue?
I think we're letting the people who are running these tent cities, as they're called, I think we're letting them get away with too much legally. I know that at the border, when someone comes with their family, the child, the current laws that are set in place, the child can't be prosecuted, but the family can, and that gives them a very tangible reason to separate the family. So now they can keep these kids outside of the United, well, I guess, in a closed-off section of the United States, and then they can deal with the parents and all the legal stuff later. And this came up during the Democratic presidential mm-hmm. debate last night,
yeah.
where they were talking about removing that part of the bill. And I guess a lot of the criticisms that were coming in was like, oh, how are we going to deal with the drug traffickers that come in? How are we going to deal with the human traffickers that come mm-hmm. in? And then I think what I remember is that there are already other rules and regulations set in place to deal with that. So removing that part of the bill wouldn't really affect how we deal with illegal immigrants legally at all. So I think that we have an unnecessary amount of loopholes for the people who want to use loopholes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I have a friend of mine who is a lawyer who says for every law there's the way to break it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's really the real deal. I mean, so there's always going to be a loophole. There's going to be some way that we can skirt the issue. But I think you raised some good points. You're tuned into 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. For our listening audience, we have been on the air 24 years, the end of June. That dates me, right? Yeah, see, I started it when I was out of high school, okay? We're going to take a quick break and we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens, and we're looking at various political issues that are happening at the national, the state, and the local level. We're still talking about immigration and wanted to get where you all sit, where you're coming from, on integration.
So the first thing you mentioned when you brought up this topic is that picture,
mm-hmm.
that picture.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows what type of country are we, especially those who are looking from the outside in, those who are possibly looking, coming to the United States, other countries. I believe with immigration that we definitely need to put more resources, more support for people trying to come to the country. I believe that these immigration courts, mm-hmm. there's a lack of funding, a lack of judges, especially
because those people don't matter. I mean, that's their attitude.
It's the outsider
those people
effect,
that, yeah, those, and not to interrupt you, but mm-hmm. I just gotta interject something.
Yeah,
you know, that's not a primary focus. It really doesn't matter. Okay, so it's not funded like it needs to be, okay? And another thing, I'm just throwing these out for you all to think about as we talk about it. Maybe there ought to be, or maybe there are other ways to approach this immigration issue. Maybe we can look at how we can support those countries that they're coming from.
That's true.
You know, we're so concerned, okay, they're coming here, we can't just take people, we can't just keep them coming here, mm-hmm. okay? But you know, we give billions of dollars away. Can we maybe earmark, I don't know, some of that money mm-hmm. to support these countries so that people can stay in their country? I don't, you know, these are just things I'm throwing out there for you all to think about, okay, as we continue. And the other thing is if our laws say that we separate the children from their parents, then something's wrong with that. Bottom line, there's something wrong with that. And then when we separate them, we don't give them toothbrushes, we don't give them toothpaste, they're sleep. I don't care what color they are. And the reality is that has something to do with it, okay? Whether we skirt around the issue and you all don't talk about it, that has something to do with it, okay? Trump already said he don't have any problem with people coming from the Scandinavian country. Now, what message does that send? Pretty clear. I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah.
Okay? So I just want you all to, you know, we're going to look at these issues. We gotta tear them apart. We need to really look at them. Okay.
Enough for me. I personally, like, see this as an excellent opportunity to be able to build an amazing relationship with Mexico. I mean, if you have that many people coming for refugee in the United States, we can use that to our advantage. I mean, we could so easily just say, all right, we'll let these people in. Let's strike a good trade agreement. Let's do something together. Let's start something that we can both do as countries. I mean, it's an amazing opportunity that's really being wasted, and it's as a result of it being wasted, thousands of kids are dying. All these parents probably aren't ever going to be able to see their kids anymore.
Can you imagine? I just can't imagine as a parent being coming to a country and being separated from my child and then being sent back. And then the country doesn't even know where my kids are. Because that has happened. They try to downplay that, but that's going on. A lot of parents' words return to their home country, and the kids were left here. Now, if you return a parent and the kid is 2 years old, how are they going to give you information on who their parents are or where they come from? They didn't bother to take good notes. They didn't get a lot of information. I mean, you know, we've got to, we talk about our country. What message does that say? What does that say about us if we're going to treat people like that? If we're going to treat children like that? I don't know. I mean, I'm on my, so I just find it just, oh, so deep. Yes.
I believe it's everything, the message that we're sending, it's everything that's against what the U.S. is supposed to stand for. We're supposed to be the country of freedom, giving opportunities. And at the end of the day, I believe a person is a person. Race, religion, sexuality, gender, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Everybody, no matter what, is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if that means that we have to help Mexico, because a lot of these people that are coming from Mexico, they're trying to escape, you know, the cartels in Mexico. They're trying to escape that. They're trying to give a better life to their children. And, you know, if we cannot help Mexico, then we owe it to them, to the people, and to what we stand for, to try to help them, at least come to the U.S.
You know? Yeah, it's not about political parties now. It's not about whether you're a Democrat or, forget that, has nothing to do with this. You know, these children are Democratic children or Republican children. Yeah. So that stuff is BS, okay? Mm-hmm. But we already know how the administration feels. He's already called those countries S-hole countries. Mm-hmm. They're coming from, if that is the attitude, then I don't see where we're going. It starts at the top and it dwindles down. Go on. You have comments.
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to say, this was brought up in the Democratic debate last night. Mm-hmm. And I think that the solution that I appreciated the most was, I mean, just open borders. Like, if someone is coming for asylum, I feel like we as a country have to grant that to them. And I don't understand what... I mean, I understand, like, we need to do background checks. We need to make sure people are who they say they are, etc. But if someone is coming for their health, for their safety, especially for their kids, like, who are we to not grant them that right, you know? I mean, it's just a border. Like,
yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Sure.
I also believe that we also owe it to the citizens of the United States. We need to protect them. At the end of the day, because there are people from different countries that, you know, it doesn't it doesn't matter.
I know.
You know, it doesn't matter, like, who you are. If you're a bad person, white, black, it doesn't matter what religion, you shouldn't be here, you know? So I think we need to set, we're putting so much money into stuff we shouldn't, be putting it into, if you know what I mean. And I think we can just put that in money into making sure that parents are not separated from their children, that we can, you know, while we're reviewing the cases, we can try to, you know, make these places that we have to, you know, put them, make them better, give them toothpaste and soap and, you know, things like that. Just give them basic needs and stuff. But at the end of the day, we owe it to our citizens to protect them, you know, so there are things that we can do that, you know, we can make sure the people that are escaping these terrible things that are going on in these countries, we get those people where they need to be here in the United States. But there's also measures that we can take to protect the people in the United States keep those people out that don't need to be here.
Okay. Other comments?
I just want to go back to, I really think, I mean, it's sickening to think about it this way, but I really feel that some part of this is true, that this is a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
These immigrants that are coming in, these are going to be the kids, the people that are going to be voting Democrat in the future. And it can be looked in both ways, where Republicans don't want that, so they start tent cities to keep them from voting, but also Democrats support that. I know for sure there are many congressmen, senators that support this to get votes and don't support it to get votes. And it's sickening to think about it, but it's so true.
It's a good point. Yeah.
It's a good point. Oh, that's... This issue is just very complex. Security, as he mentioned, and then open borders and just all these different types of things going on. It's something else.
I know, we spend a lot of time just even talking about it. I mean, I know it is.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're not on television, so we don't have to worry anybody can see our faces, but everybody looks kind of distressed. Yeah. You know, first we were up, and then we got to this, and it's like, okay, the whole mood changes.
It's been so present, especially with this current administration. I love the idea of having some sort of forum with Mexico, but this current administration is not interested in building any sorts of bridges or
They're
any sort of
whole countries. I mean, and I'm not making that up. You know, it's an asshole country. So if that's what it is, why are we going to waste our time even talking to them, okay? If you're not from Scandinavia. Well, enough for that. Let's move on, because Special Counsel Mueller is going to testify. We got to talk about this in these last few minutes. We don't have that much time. Will testify before Congress on July 17th.
All right.
First of all, do you think it's really going to happen? And if so, what will it accomplish?
Well, he's been subpoenaed for it, and he's...
But, you know, people can be subpoenaed and still not...
I mean, he's a sane person,
yes.
So he's not going to just avoid that. I mean, there's tons of consequences for that. But I know sometimes those consequences aren't really felt. I just can't wait for him to just say exactly what he wrote in the report.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans hired him.
And he's a Republican.
Republicans want him.
He is a Republican.
Want him to now testify because he didn't produce the results they wanted. Because when Trump tweets out no obstruction of justice, and then Mueller goes the very next day and says, "Yo, bro, that's not true." It doesn't really vibe well with them, and now they want him to testify to try to make him look bad, but I just think he's going to handle it so well, and I can't wait for it.
Okay.
Yeah, he does seem like the sort of person who will stay calm under any of pressure, and I think this opportunity will also give the American people a bit more familiarity with what he written, because how long was that report?
400 pages.
I don't think majority of Americans are going to unless they're, you know, invested into that sort of issue. But yeah, I think it will be a great opportunity for the rest of us who are outside of Washington to kind of really look into what's going on with this presidency and such.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's right now, it's kind of hard to see, tell, like, what is the report saying? Because you have all these different, like, medias who are conflicting, and, like, I just don't have any truth. You know, I don't know what is actually said, and I don't, you know, Trump's tweeting one thing, but all of these other Democrats are tweeting other things. Like, I just don't know. So I'm just excited to hear what he's got to say. Just, you know, have something honest.
Yeah. I think he'll show up, and I think that the facts should be laid out. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. You know, I think the truth needs to be laid out, and if Donald Trump was involved in obstruction of justice, he should be impeached. Nobody is above the law.
Nobody.
But, you know, there are a lot of people hoping that he's, you know, that he is such a terrible guy. Do we want to hope that our president is a terrible guy? Now, he said a lot of things that I do not agree with, like a ton of things. A lot of things, but I'm hoping and I'm praying that, you know, at the end of the day that, you know, I don't want anybody to be charged with a crime. I hope everybody, you know, would go away from that. I want all the facts to be laid out, you know, and I'm hoping that this man didn't do anything wrong, because for our president to do something wrong, we look back to Richard Nixon. That was a catastrophe.
And it
absolute
was.
Catastrophe. And I don't want that to happen to this country. I'm praying and I'm hoping that the whole truth will be set out and that, you know, nothing catastrophic will happen. But I'm also saying that if the truth is out and he did something wrong, he should be impeached. And, you know, nobody is above the law. So I pray nothing bad on any man or woman. I hope that, you know, at the end of the day, there's no catastrophe, but if he needs to be impeached, he should be impeached.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. What do you think? Do you think that Mueller testifying will be a good thing? Or is it a bad thing? Or is it a waste of time?
I think it would be a good thing for him to testify.
Okay. In what way? I mean, do you feel like it will open the door, and just what other folks have said, and that it will give us more insight into exactly what his investigation showed?
I think it'll bring more details and more opinions on the subject, you know,
and that can be a positive thing. Okay. All right. These last few minutes, and we mentioned this before we came on the air. The Democrats have 6 female candidates for president. Okay? Dynamic women.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, the United States, in your opinion, really ready for a female president? In your opinion, what do you think?
I'd say, in my opinion, yes. I think we've been waiting for one for a long time. I know that the candidates that we currently have Democratic side.
All we know is the Democratic side now. You know, and I'm not talking about Democrat or Republican. I'm just saying, are we ready? Do you think we're ready for a female president? Can a female, let me throw this in there, run against Trump? Think about it.
I mean, the thing that happened with Hillary was that her past was kind of
females.
So I think the candidates that we do have currently that are female aren't like that. And I mean, I'm a huge supporter of Warren. I think she'd be a great president if she'd get elected. So I think that she also has the guts to kind of stand up to Trump, which a lot of Democrats are kind of like starting to back up on him. He's like, his presidency is almost over, let's not. But she's still like, okay, this man needs to go. So there's a lot of strong women running on the candidacy for the Democratic ballot. So yeah, I definitely think we're ready for a woman president.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for a woman president, and I do think the rest of the country is. I mean, Clinton did beat Trump, like, by popular vote. The majority of the country did want her, but just the Electoral College didn't work out, and, you know, I understand that. But I do think a woman could do it. And I think it would be incredibly empowering for all of the young women and all women of all ages to see a woman at the top. And especially for me, I'm very passionate about this.
About 20 seconds.
Okay, we'll make this quick. I would personally love to see a woman as president. I would love to see a woman as vice president. I do not feel that the country is going to do that, though, for various reasons, societal, gender, you know, all those sorts of, you know, stereotypes and people in America, you know. So, yeah.
I am out of time. So you all have to come back. You know that, right? You don't have any choice. To my listening audience, I want to say thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.